as the internet has evolved, as the industry has become more competitive, as people have come in and copied what I do, I never said to myself, oh, now it's going to be too tough to continue. Instead, I thought to myself, what can I do better?
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Brian Morgan has a superpower. He's figured out how to turn his wanderlust into a thriving business. After graduating from college in the mid-90s, he alternated stints in Russia and South America with half-hearted attempts to nail down a stay-at-home career. Eventually, Brian returned to Missoula, Montana, and combining entrepreneurship with a love of Latin America, he set up a few tours there. Creating Adventure Life in 1999, Brian learned from the ground up how to run a travel business. Today, the company is a multi-million dollar travel concierge service offering customized experiences from the South Pacific to Europe, from Greenland to Antarctica. On this episode of Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we'll learn about who today's adventure travelers are and where they're headed, and how Brian adapts to the challenges of an ever-changing industry. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks, Arnie. I'm delighted to be here.
I have to ask you right out of the box, what are the hot travel destinations for 2019? I'm sure that's the question you get asked the most, but I have to ask it as well.
Most people ask me what's my favorite place to travel. So I'm actually delighted to talk about just great places to travel. So Antarctica is always a huge hit. People are surprised about that because they think of it as kind of a wasteland, but it's actually got tons and tons of wildlife. So you go there to see the wildlife, believe it or not, and the scenery. Galapagos is always huge for us. Peru. So those are some of our mainstays, but some other fantastic places include the Danube River in Europe and the Rhine as well. Cambodia and Thailand are big for us as well. So these are some fantastic places to visit.
Who are today's adventure travelers?
I think I'm looking at one, Arnie.
You're right.
So, you know, adventure means a lot of things to a lot of different people. But for us, it's really defined as going somewhere that's going to put you out of your comfort zone a little bit. And something that's going to really introduce you to cultures and environments that you're not familiar to. So that's sort of the core part of adventure. And that really covers all kinds of people, from, you know, youthful travelers to people that are in their 80s and 90s and never got to Antarctica, or they want to visit the North Pole as one of their big bucket list items.
You offer customized, personalized tours. Do you have to spend a lot of money for that?
No, not at all. In fact, you're going to spend the same whether you go with us or whether you plan it all yourself. We go to the same hotels. You know, you have to pay for guide service, all this sort of thing. We make our money because we have large volume going to destinations, and so it works out well for everybody. The amount of time that we save a person, that's really where the savings comes from, because it's hard to put together a 2-week itinerary that's going to visit 4 or 5 different destinations, have all your excursions work for you, and not lose 2 or 3 days because the excursion was all booked out and you can't go on that day. You can't go to that museum that day, or the boat isn't departing that day. So I would say you basically pay the same whether you go with us or you do it on your own, but you definitely save a lot of time.
And do you service both novice and experienced adventure travelers?
Yeah, you bet, for sure. We have people who have traveled with us over and over and over again. In fact, I was looking at one gentleman who must have gone on 15 plus trips with us over the years, and he's very well traveled. He's traveled everywhere from Nicaragua, looking at what happened there during the revolution, to going to Antarctica and Galapagos and different places. And he's a very well-seasoned traveler, but still books with us. We also have people who have never traveled before, and this is a big deal for them to go to Costa Rica for the first time. And they also book with us because they want that peace of mind.
Tell me about the genesis of Adventure Life. It's been in operation now for 20 years. How did it get started?
Well, that's a great memory I have. So I think I should begin that I'm from Haver, Montana, especially since much of the audience here might be from Montana. And Haver is a great place to grow up as a child. We ran all over the town and had all kinds of freedom and no fear of anything, it seemed like. But by the time I hit high school, I felt like the world was everywhere besides Haver. And so I wanted to get out. So I really worked on getting out. I went to Russia for a year in college. After college, I went off to Ecuador for a year. And when I came back to Montana, I still had this wanderlust. And I was thinking, how do I live overseas? Or how do I live here and still somehow go overseas regularly? So I planned my first trip purely as a hobby. I thought I would go once a year to Ecuador, maybe Peru, Bolivia, some places I had lived, and I would take a few people with me, and they'd essentially pay for my flight ticket. Well, in the midst of planning that first trip and doing the research on it, I discovered there was an entire industry of adventure travel companies, companies that help people experience the world. And I love sharing the places I've been. I love sharing the world with people, and I had this inspiration to do it, and I thought I can do it, and I went for it.
Fast forward 20 years. What does it look like now?
Now there are 43 of us, and we need to hire a few more people. So I guess we're getting to that 50 mark, which changes all kinds of things, they say. So there's over 40 of us. Calls come in all the time. I deal with personnel issues now, a lot of fun ones. We have maternity leave that we just added, 8 weeks of it, which is a big deal for a small company. So we deal with those kind of things, which are very satisfying, but take a lot of research and wherewithal for a small business. And we have thousands of customers every year going all over the world, not merely to the few places I had visited when I was in college.
You mentioned there's all sorts of travel agencies, organizations out there providing services. What's unique about Adventure Life?
I think there's two things. One is our personalized service. When you call, you get a person on the phone immediately, and that person is there to help you, to listen to you, to hear what you want to do, and then to guide you and help create the best itinerary that we can create for you. The second thing that's very different is that we curate programs. So we won't just offer anything to anybody. We have selected destinations that we have researched profoundly and selected the very best and most interesting programs and things to do in each of those destinations. So we're not a traditional travel agency who is fine sending you to wherever our database pulls up, but we instead send people to only the destinations that we know well, and we only send them to the resorts, the wilderness lodges, the excursions that we really feel have great value for all kinds of people.
You mentioned a good customer experience relies on your staff. Tell me about your people and what qualifies them to give advice to customers.
The first thing is they all come to us with a love of travel to begin with. So we hire people who have a demonstrated love of travel. They have gone overseas many times. The vast majority of my employees, our team, they have lived overseas. They have lived in some challenging countries. They have lived in some really exciting countries. That's the first thing that we look for when we hire people. We also hire people who love to help people. My employees are the kind of person that enjoys helping other people, and they enjoy sharing their knowledge with people. To add to that, we have a ton of training that we put into every employee. Every single week, we have suppliers who come to our office. They fly all the way from all corners of the world they come from, and they come to Missoula, Montana, and they host training sessions for our office here. So we have people that come from parts of Africa, parts of Asia, Latin America. They come all the way to Missoula, Montana. For the vast majority, they've never even heard of Montana until they start working with us. They realize that we're a good partner, and then they come and do the trainings with us. We have regular webinars, things of that nature. It's an ongoing thing. Our employees also travel every year. Every single employee takes a trip every single year, and so they get to see the places firsthand.
So you personally select the local people on the ground that will come in contact with your customers?
Yes. We don't work through any kind of large network where they sort of vet the suppliers for us, the partners for us. It's our agency doing the research, getting on the ground as needed, and selecting the partners that we're going to work with.
So where are you going to go on your next holiday?
So my travels changed a little bit because I have a 3-year-old now, and we are going to Europe this summer, partly because I have friends there and my wife has friends there, but also because it's a great destination that's safe and easy to travel with a family. My wife and I will get to eat some fantastic food. We'll feel safe with our daughter the whole time. It'll be very easy. We also recently, though, came back from Borneo with our family, so it's not like all of our travels are focused on very tame places these days. We were just in Borneo. We saw orangutans. We went snorkeling. We went diving. My little girl didn't go diving, obviously. But we also get out to further places.
You mentioned earlier that you are taking on new business responsibilities as the company grows, like human resources and maternity, paternity leave. How did you learn to build your company?
When I needed to hire my first person, I thought to myself, what is it that I'm doing now that somebody else could do? And as I added each new position, that was the process I went through. What am I personally doing that somebody else could do? And I used that process to grow the initial positions of our sales and our marketing and our operations and fulfillment and things of that nature. So that was the initial learning I went through. Beyond that, I looked to other people for advice on ways of motivating and interacting with my employees. We have a great local resource here that helps do different training sessions with my team that I also work with for training myself, because I really feel that running a small business, especially a business that's growing and in a very competitive industry, requires that everybody in the business is prepared to learn new things and do new things and do things in a different way. And that includes myself. And if I'm not willing to do things in a new way, I certainly can't ask my employees to do that too.
If it's not a secret, who's the local resource that you mentors you and you turn to?
It's not a secret at all. Her name's Colleen Rudio with Cascade Business Consulting, I believe. So Colleen is fantastic, and I've been working with her for 4 or 5 years at least. And she works with us regularly. Every quarter, she's in there doing something with my team and myself.
How was Adventure Life initially financed?
It was financed out of my wallet. I purchased a laptop with a credit card. It was one of the first times I bought something with a credit card with no knowledge whether I could pay it off right away. One of the first and only times. I did get a $10,000 line of credit through my local bank in Haver because my family had done business there for so long. I think they just gave it to me because they knew my parents. And I used a few thousand of that. And the rest of it was I worked a second job full-time for the first couple months. And I lived with 5 people in a house meant for about 3, but it was cheap rent. So it was that kind of financing.
The travel industry is very competitive. I go on social media and I have pop-ups from Trivago and Tripmasters and TripAdvisors and all sorts of different groups. How do you position yourself in this crowded marketplace?
It is an ongoing challenge for certain. When we first got into the business, we thought that our main value proposition was fixed itineraries, where we offered an itinerary that we thought was great and people would come in and buy that itinerary. Over time, or over the first 10 years, as the internet continued to evolve and the competition online became so intense, we quickly realized that our real value proposition was in the ability to handcraft an itinerary that really tailored around a single person, because we realized that takes a huge amount of time, and that's the most precious resource that our travelers have is time. So if we can save them their time in the planning process, then we can also win their business. So although there's all these other websites, the TripAdvisors and the Trivagos and things like that, they're fantastic if you need to book a hotel room somewhere. But if you need to put together a 2-week-long itinerary to a destination that you're never going to go to again, so we're not talking about a trip to New York where maybe you'll take a few of those during your lifetime. We're talking a trip to an African safari or to go see the Mayan ruins in Belize.
Or Borneo.
Or to Borneo. You're only going one time. And it takes a lot of research to find a company that you trust that when you arrive, they'll be there with a sign for you. And that's the work and that's the value proposition that we put into things.
Have you and your staff figured out the kind of questions to ask a customer to figure out what's going to meet their needs?
For sure. The first question you want to ask is, you know, what do you want to get out of the trip? You know, what is your ideal when you think of going to a particular destination? Because people, when they come to us, generally they know the destination they want to go to. So the first question to ask is, when you think of going to, you know, to Europe, what is it that you want to experience? What is your ideal experience there? That's the very first question.
And I assume even with experienced travelers, let's say you pick a place like Paris, somebody's been there 3 or 4 or 5 times, but there are different ways to experience a city, and hopefully your people are enabled to kind of dig down and find out what they're looking for and craft something unique and different for them.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, the first time you go to Paris, you're going to go to the Louvre and you're going to go see the Eiffel Tower, and you know, you're going to go have a meal at 8 o'clock, thinking that you're eating really late, and actually, you know, the locals aren't showing up till like 11 or something. You know, our job is to find out, if you've been to Paris, what have you done, and let's talk about what other options there might be. Maybe it's time to actually get into a kitchen and learn something about French cooking. Maybe that's something that really interests you. There's many things that a person could do.
And you pointed out the eating late phenomena that happens in many places around the world. Do you have orientation materials that you provide your customers so that they figure out before they get there what the local customs are?
Yeah, you bet. We have all of that. And what we have beyond that, because you can find that all over the web, what we have beyond that is you can call somebody in my office and you can ask them, hey, I've heard about this. Can you really explain that a little more detail with me? That's something we offer that you're not going to get when you book through a really large online travel site, which, again, if you're just looking for a hotel, may be fine for you, but you're not going to be able to call up immediately directly to get to your contact, the person you've been working with from the beginning, and ask them direct questions.
Most of your customers never visit your physical facility. They're online or digital customers that find you. How do they find you?
That's correct. Most of our customers don't visit us. We are always delighted when we have customers visit. And we even have people who are traveling through Montana on a vacation and they come and visit us. But the vast majority of our customers find us online through searches. So, you know, the classic Google search, they find us. We also have a great PR campaign that's ongoing where journalists find us and write about our trips. We've been featured in places like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, USA Today, Condé Nast Traveler. So, you know, being located in Missoula, Montana, we love the lifestyle here, but we have to work extra hard to make sure people can find us.
And those experiences, you reach out to those publications, or do they actually find you?
It works both ways. So we have to reach out because we're located here and we're not going to just have a cocktails with somebody at a DC bar who also works for Condé Nast Publishing or something. So we have to reach out. But we also have many journalists who find us because of the programs we're offering and the type of service that we're offering.
You've built a successful business in a very competitive space. What do you think prepared you to run this business?
I'm not somebody who thinks that problems can't be solved. I always have the attitude that there's a way of solving any problem. And so when I got into this business, I didn't know anything about it. That was probably to my benefit, because if I had, I might have been too scared to get into it. I just saw the opportunity to build a business where I could share my experiences. And I thought, I can do this. As the internet has evolved, as the industry has become more competitive, as people have come in and copied what I do, I never said to myself, oh, now it's going to be too tough to continue. Instead, I thought to myself, what can I do better? Whenever there was a problem that we wanted to face, I think, we're going to solve this problem. So that kind of attitude, I think, in so many businesses is important. And in my business, it was probably the single most important thing for our founding and for our continued success.
If you had to do the past 20 years over again, is there anything you would have done differently?
Probably not. I mean, everybody would like to have a couple different lives and try different routes. But in the end, I'm pretty happy with the route that I've gone on and the journey that I've had.
Is it difficult to find the right employees for? I mean, this is a very specialized position. You have to have somebody with personality that can interact, you know, long distance with customers, and also know the destinations and have a feel for, you know, travel. Is it hard to find those people?
Yes and no. When we weren't growing so rapidly, we always found the right people. Was it hard to, do we have to interview a lot of people to find those people? For sure. We would get 100, 120 applicants at a time to fill one position. So finding the right person was challenging, but they were always there. We've been going through a lot of growth in the past 18 months. We've basically doubled in size. And because of that, and because we're in a small market, for sure, it's been more challenging. But we're still finding people who can fill those positions. And we're finding them, by and large, they're local people. Many times they've just moved to Missoula. I consider that a local person if I didn't bring them here. Missoula's such a fantastic place because people want to move here. They want to live here. They come through in the summertime. They experience the farmer's market. They go for a hike. And then they decide to sell their house in Arlington and move across the country with no jobs. I have many employees, you know, who did that with their partner. They moved out to Missoula with no jobs, and we hired them in their first week or 3 weeks here in Missoula.
What's the impetus for this dramatic doubling of the organization of the company in the last 18 months? What's gone on that's led to that?
Well, the 6 months before that, so about 2 years ago, we attacked our website from the ground up and really did a massive redesign, not just with the visuals and the navigation, but providing tools for, you know, the classic search engine optimization. And that work that we did, which was probably even more than 2 years ago, it probably took 8 months or longer to develop, those gave us the tools that we needed to begin having a level of success in search engine results that we hadn't had in many years since the very early days, and found the right consultant to work with. He's been doing a fantastic job with us. We feel like he's an employee with the company now. And it really, you know, gave us sort of a shot of adrenaline. And we've sort of been playing catch up for the last year and a half, but it's been great.
And are you reaching more of the same customer, or are you expanding into a different customer segment now?
Well, our customer segment is so broad that I wouldn't say that it's a different customer segment, because our customer segment is so broad. We have trips that cost $9.95 to go to Costa Rica for a week, but we also have trips that cost $28,000 to go to the Arctic. So we really do capture a broad spectrum of the market. What all those people have in common is they're all intrepid people. They all are curious people. And the reason they choose us is because we're offering an experience and the chance to learn and really dive into a place. That's why they choose us. Some people choose to go to destinations that are less expensive with us and to stay at hotels, which are often the most expensive part of your trip, that are less expensive. But others go for destinations that are very challenging to get to, which increases the cost greatly. And they know that we're going to provide the best experience in those places.
Would you say customers are now more sophisticated than they have been when you first got started?
There is no doubt about it. Customers often come to us and know as much or more than we do about something. They come to us and say, I've heard about this, this, and that. And whether we know of that exactly or not isn't really the important thing. We ask them what's important, and then we say, don't worry, we're going to do the legwork to figure out how to produce this for you and the best way to go about and do that, and if it's really worth your time.
Do you have foreign customers that contact you about touring the United States and want a program put together in the U.S.?
We do, but not very often. We've had a little bit of interest in Montana, particularly from China, and we have run some programs with families through Montana. They've gone to Missoula, Glacier, and Yellowstone, but not so much. People generally contact us for the destinations that we're promoting on our website.
Do the destinations that you promote on your website change as the interest of the market changes?
I would say that we expand upon them. We've rarely had to retire a destination. We have retired destinations due to safety, but we haven't had to retire a destination due to lack of interest. Most of our time dealing with destinations is actually in expanding a destination. And we do so much research. It can take 6 months to a year to add a single destination. So mostly it's adding destinations.
Brian, I've been reading recently about the concept of over-tourism. What does that really mean?
Well, it means so many people going to a destination that it's ruining the experience that it once was. I think it's a very real phenomenon. Tourism continues to grow. When you have countries that previously weren't able to travel, they didn't have the financial and time resources to go out and experience the world, and now they do, then you're going to have more people visiting a site. And the first sites that people want to visit are some of the big name sites like Venice and New Zealand and different places like that. If you're a conscientious traveler, I think the important thing is to try to visit places in a conscientious way by one, maybe visiting them during their shoulder season, not during their peak season. Not only that is that better for the destination, but it's better for you as the traveler as well, because you're not going to have to share that and feel so overcrowded. And you can have a little more of the unique experience that really put that place on the map originally.
Right. For example, you don't want to go to St. Mark's Square in Venice in August because it's you feel like pigeons and, you know, in a cage.
I wouldn't want to do that. And so I think if you went in September or October, it would be a very different experience.
There's a flip side to the over-tourism, which is there are places like Iceland that are very small that are getting very popular, and they're getting more people than they can handle.
That's a flip side. That is over-tourism, right?
The point I was making is you have a country like China where there's much more tourism going on, and so you have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of new tourists entering the marketplace, increasing the base of tourists. But then you also have locations that have become popular, and they can't handle the new interest in Reykjavik or other places that just don't have the infrastructure to respond.
That's right. I think this is a real, these are real questions that local people have to be the first ones to ask themselves. What is it they want? I'm a real believer that local residents are the ones who need to be part of the decision on how they're going to show their place and what they want to share. And if they're brought into that equation and they're brought into that discussion and they're empowered to control that situation, then over-tourism isn't a problem. That isn't just tourism, because it's the local people who are sharing their homes who are making the decisions on the quantities and what they want to share.
Is there two or three destinations that are the most sought after by your customers?
I would say that the destinations that we started in are still some of our most popular. So Galapagos is still my number one, and I think we might be one of the largest resellers of Galapagos in the United States. Antarctica is also very big, and all the core places in Latin America. But other destinations that are really up and coming for us, which are exciting for me, include Alaska, and the rivers of Europe are also up and coming for us, and I think that's really exciting.
Explain for our listeners what a reseller means.
If you want to go to Antarctica on a 100-passenger icebreaker, then you're not going to be able to get on to Expedia and simply book that through a traditional travel agency. Finding all the ships that might ply the waters of Antarctica is also a bit of a challenge. So those are the companies that do this are small companies as well. They might own one or two or three or four ships, and oftentimes that's all. So they rely on a distribution network of specialty agencies such as us. And so as the travel agent's model works, it's a commission, but it's a partnership that's much closer than the traditional agency partnership, where they've vetted us and we've vetted them, and we've decided to be very close partners.
I understand the allure of the Galapagos Island, but could you just briefly walk me through what somebody does on an Antarctica tour?
You bet. I've been twice, actually, to Antarctica. My last visit was 28 days. This was a long time on a boat. Antarctica cruises depart from Ushuaia, the majority of them. There's so many things that happen on an Antarctica cruise. The cruise ships typically are around 100 passengers, 75 to 125 passengers. You're on the ship for a week, 2 or 3 weeks, even in my case, 4 weeks, with these incredibly interesting individuals, because they've all managed to decide to go to Antarctica. So this is not your usual traveler. These are oftentimes very well-traveled people with very interesting pasts. The meals are all sort of family style, so you're sitting down with different people in the evening and really getting to know them, having drinks with them on board, because it's a small ship. It's like being in your living room sometimes. You get to know these people and hear their stories. That's has nothing to do with Antarctica, but it definitely has something to do with the small ship experience. Antarctica itself is an explosion of the senses. The landscape is awe-inspiring. When you see an iceberg floating in the water and you're so far away from it in the beginning. But as you get closer to it, and it's rising up above you, and you realize it's the size of a skyscraper, there's something about that that you can't even quite put words to. The wildlife, it's not that you see a few animals here and there. A whale sighting experience could be with 10 or 20 individuals. When we were in Antarctica last time, we had a whale sighting experience that must have had over 30 different humpback whales. The boat stopped, and the whales came around and hung out with us for over 3 hours. They hung out, and they did different different things with their flukes and their fins. It was really fantastic. You go to South Georgia Island, which does require a 3-week trip, and you don't see a few hundred penguins. You see 100,000 pairs of king penguins. It's a carpet of penguins. So it's really an explosion of the senses when you go to Antarctica.
You convey a lot of enthusiasm for travel. What does the future hold for Brian Morgan?
That's a great question, Arnie, because it has been 20 years. First of all, I love the people I work with. And so, not working with them every day is something that I do not imagine. I also like the challenges that we face. I find them to be fun, which is so important because over the course of 20 years, at times it hasn't been fun, but right now it is a lot of fun, the challenges that we're facing and the successes that we're seeing. So I anticipate continuing with Adventure Life, continuing to see it grow. And then myself, I have other interests as well. And so I can't do just one thing. So as you know, I've done real estate in the past where I've built some small apartment buildings. I think of it as my big kid Legos. So I'm not a professional at it, but I just love seeing something go from a bare piece of ground into a concept that I dreamed of and then seeing people want to use it and fill it up. So I love that. And more and more, I'm trying to get involved with the university here. So I'm involved at the College of Humanities and Sciences on their advisory board. And the Honors College is also near and dear to me. And anytime they need any volunteer assistance from an alumni, I'm always there for them too.
Brian, thank you for being on the show today. It was great catching up with you and hearing about your adventurous life.
Thank you, Arnie. It was fantastic for me as well, and I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do, when our guest will be Sherry Davidoff, author, cyber sleuth, and security badass. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.